Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barachini, and Alex Hopton.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to episode 153 of Sticks. An unusual episode as we're doing it in Wednesday afternoon, but lighting the way for some of us and us, and you know, it's a bad time to kind of get it going. People can take a break, work, tune into Sticks in the Six, and get a little Leaf talk while they're there. Before we get into the lackluster trade deadline for our boys, let's throw it to you guys. Alex, how you doing this week?
I'm doing good. I as we were just talking about off air, I made the crucial mistake of not getting my date right for a physiotherapy appointment that I have today. So you're going to have to see me take off at some point. I'm hoping to stick around here for the Leafs talk, but if you see me get up and just leave at some point, I just know that was a cause of my own stupidity, but and no, things are going well. If you guys remember back in November, I achieved the feat of taking our Division 11, which is the lowest of our 11 division, taking our championship. And I am proud to say that we are going to be kicking off our season on Friday, going for the highly coveted Division 10 championship. So we're working our way up the ladder. And yeah, we'll see if we can make it back-to-back chips. So I'm looking forward to that.
I love it. Peter, how you doing this? How you doing this week, my friend?
Doing good, man. Again, I kind of wish I was still playing, like, you know, not necessarily ball hockey, but beer league hockey to keep the legs going, man. I got to find a league. I got to do something, because hearing your stories about the about the teams that you're in, you know, the divisional matchups and everything like that, it just seems like I want to get back into it. I want to do something active. So gotta start finding some leagues right now just to you know, keep myself active and keep myself sane, because it's been years since I actually hit the ice.
Peter, I should mention that as much fun as I have doing ball hockey, and as great of a time as it is, I also heavily embellish how exciting it is for the purpose of this show. So either way, though, it's a lot of fun, and yeah, I definitely recommend it. It's
but you still make it fun, though. You still make it that interesting, despite it being, you know, low level, low division. It's still fun. Exactly. Like, you actually hype it up. That's why I want to get back into it.
Yeah. Well, so what you're saying is I'm giving you a great sales pitch to get back into playing ball hockey.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know what? If nothing else, I'll take that. I just, I know that when I got back into it, it was after a while. Like, I hadn't played any sort of organized sport in a while, and it felt great to be out there. And just, even if I was playing in the lowest division with a whole bunch of dads and stuff, it was a great time. So, yeah, I'd recommend getting into it.
Well, we will get into it a little bit later with some Rempe talk regarding fighting and hockey and all that. Anyways, boys, I wanted to quickly give you a little funny story today. It's not so much funny, but it's just like, I mean, I find it humorous, but anyways, I got, in the last couple of days here at work, I had somebody, threaten to punch me in the face.
Okay. Okay.
And, that sounds like a mistake, but go on. Yeah.
I'm not going to bury the lead, but anyways, it was an employee.
What?
Yeah. Oh, no. So anyways, I'm usually the happiest go lucky guy at work. Anyways, I guess there was some talk that the feeling was off last night, and it was because there was a little bit of tension that you could cut with a knife. And man, oh, I hate fake threats, boys. I hate fake threats. So to anybody listening out there, if you're gonna bring it. Let's dance.
I like the fact that you put your money where your mouth is, kind of thing. That's going to be the theme for this episode.
That's right.
I like the fact that you threw in a little journalism reference there. You don't want to bury the lead on your story.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you know this guy's a bang up supervisor and a great journalist.
That's right. I take my job seriously. Yeah. Anyways, boys. Other than that, my week's been pretty stale in terms of excitement. But we do have some Leaf talk to get to, and obviously Alex, we're going to start off with the Leaf talk here because we want to get your take on the deadline, the lackluster deadline or what it was. But we got to get right into the acquisitions that the Leafs did make. Obviously DeWar comes in and helps out the Leafs depth. Edmondson, another depth pickup for the Leafs. Other than that, it was quiet from Brad Treliving and the Toronto Maple Leafs this deadline. Peter, let's throw it to you first. Your take on what the Leafs did, what they came out with, and what does this mean for this team moving forward this season?
Yeah, so the big thing was everyone was complaining about the prices given up. You know, they were all like mid to low level picks and everything like that. And I get for a team like Toronto where you don't have enough draft capital, you want to save all the picks. But to me, the meat and potatoes that you want to keep are your first, your second, and your thirds. You can find those gems in the fourth and fifth, but I think the Maple Leafs have found quite a few of those in past drafts that they could afford to give those up. Digress a little bit. What they needed to add was exactly what they needed. And as much as we talked about, you know, finding another right shot defenseman that could play in the top four, that seems more of like an offseason move than it was trade deadline. Kind of, there were some rumors floating around there, but that was just it. It was just rumors. Can't take that very seriously, but there was talk. That's all you need to say. I thought the Maple Leafs did well. Yes, it was kind of dull. It wasn't the best deadline in terms of bringing in an impact name, but the players that they needed in terms of Joel Edmondson, Connor DeWar, to fill out that depth and be a little bit more consistent and competitive, that's what they needed. You know, again, we talk about giving up. I think they only gave up one prospect, Dmitry Ovchinnikov. And even then, that wasn't a whole lot. You got another prospect that could provide some substance back in Cade Weber, who, by the way, congratulations, who won Defensive Defenseman of the Year in East Division. Yes, Hockey, I was going to say NCAA, but it wasn't fully that. But in the East, for Boston University. So congrats to him. And that just seems like an underrated move in terms of like building for the future. But what they needed right now in DeWar, what they needed in Edmondson, those are the type of moves that, again, it may not provide a lot of substance, but it could have an impact down the line into the playoffs. And it gives Brad Treliving, he said it in with his comments, this is now on the star players to show what they're made of now. This is now their moment. They got the depth pieces. It's now the time for the Stars to actually live up to expectations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, we've seen a little bit of fallout because of it, with obviously guys like Simone Benoit being out of the lineup. And I saw, Peter, you questioned that today with the Lions from practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of pressure right now being put on Liljegren, and to see what, if he can take the next steps in his development as well. Obviously Giordano is placed on the LTIR. Timms is kind of an odd man out at this point in time as well. There's a lot of things that come with the acquisition of a guy like Edmondson. Alex, your thoughts on the two acquisitions the Leafs made and how this either betters the team or doesn't really set them up for much more success in the come playoff time.
You know, I tweeted this after the deadline, and the reality is that the acquisition of Duehr honestly made the deadline a 6 in my eyes compared to what would have probably been a 3. It's kind of weird to be saying something like that about a depth forward like Duehr, but the reality is they need an upgrade on the penalty kill. And they addressed that with Lyubushkin and Edmondson. And they obviously they made their additions there where they had to, but a penalty killing forward to make up, despite, you know, all the shit that everyone talked about Alex Kerfoot and my, you know, myself included, we all ripped on Kerfoot for doing cardio out there, but him and guys like Pierre Engvall, for as frustrating as they could be when they weren't producing offensively, they did hold up pretty well defensively and they did make an impact on the penalty kill. So they needed an upgrade there. And I was just glad to see that they went out and they addressed that, because now they've got another guy that they can put on the penalty kill. They don't have to milk someone like William Nylander on the penalty kill. You can have kind of like Mitch Marner, David Camp, Kelly Yarncroke, and Connor Dewar as your four penalty killers, which I think is fine. The only part of the deadline that I was a little kind of perplexed by was the salary retention on Lyubushkin and Joel Edmondson, just because those guys didn't really make a lot of money to begin with. I mean, you had the Ducks and Hurricanes both retain salary on Lyubushkin, whose contract is up after this year. And his cap hit was down to like $667,000 or something like that. And then it wasn't much more for Joel Edmondson. And I thought that, you know, if you're pinching pennies that much and you're really trying to squeeze out every last bit of retention possible and you're paying extra to do it, I thought for sure something bigger was going to happen. But ultimately, you know, Treliving was right in what he said to the media, and you echoed it right there, Peter. Making a big trade, this team is so far past the point where making a big trade deadline move is what they need to get them over the top. What they need to get them over the top is for Matthews to show up in elimination games, for Marner to show up in elimination games. And you know what, for what it's worth, I think in last year's playoffs, they did a pretty good job of shedding the narrative, at least in the first round, that they don't show up. I mean, you saw that Matthews scored the two goals in game four to kickstart the comeback. He scored the opening goal in game six. Mitch Marner had like 11 points through those six games. Yeah. So it's not like they didn't show up. But then you look at the second round. Matthews didn't have a single goal in the second round. Mitch Marner had one goal. Nylander had two. And then the rest of it came from depth scoring. So, you know, as much as I don't think they completely ghosted the playoffs last year, I also think that, you know, you're being paid soon to be $13 million, soon to be $11.5 million. Mitch Marner's going to be making more than what he's making right now, God knows. So when you're making that much money, you have to be the ones to propel your team to where they need to go. And I would like to think, maybe this is just blind optimism and huffing copium based on the past couple of years, but I am pretty confident in that they're not going to fold as easily as they have in the past, just because now they've got that round win under their belt and they know that they can do it. I think I think they always knew that they could do it, but now that they actually have, and they have the proof, and they can look back to last year and be like, hey, look, we beat out the Tampa Bay Lightning, who won back-to-back Stanley Cups, and we obviously didn't make it out of the second round, but we know we can win a playoff series. I think that hopefully that'll take some weight off their shoulders. So I don't know if I would have gone to the extent of retaining salary as in terms of what Treliving did, but then again, I did read that they were having conversations about a right-handed defenseman. I think Treliving hinted that it would pick up in the summertime, so who knows. I honestly, my totally baseless claim right now, I think that whole mock thing for Colton Parayko, I think that's going to pick up some steam in the summer. So yeah, we'll see what happens on that front. But overall, I'm satisfied with the moves they made. They addressed the penalty kill. They addressed depth on defense. I think the depth players they have on offense can absolutely show up in the playoffs. I don't think that they're really lacking in terms of scoring up front. But it's just kind of, they're at a point right now where it's okay, show us what you got, right?
Yeah, I want to agree with you. I think the salary retention, I mean, it's safe to say that there was something else in the works. There's no way that they're penny pinching to that point without the idea that, you know, they were going after something a little bit bigger. Obviously, it didn't work out, and it could have been, you know, simply the fact of where the Leafs were with the salary cap. It might be as you mentioned, a summer move that kind of picks up some steam. So, it's definitely I think it's curious, but at the same time, I think there is an explanation to it as well. That said, you know, I wasn't surprised to see a quiet deadline. There was a lot of moving pieces with other teams. It seems a lot of players are looking to go south of the border, whether that's, you know, the dollar or taxes or what have you. It's you know, you saw Noah Hanifin go down there. There was some talk that Hanifin, you know, was looking at a contract extension if he could have been traded to Tampa Bay, you know, a tax-free state. So it is interesting, the conversations that were happening. I think a lot of pieces were moved for maybe a little too much. And the Leafs right now, they don't have the draft capital to make those acquisitions. They have a lot of, you know, developing to do within their system. And I think that allowed Tree Living to play a little bit more of a safer trade deadline in his first year with the Leafs. You know, we all kind of went in not knowing what to expect from this guy. And, you know, I really don't think a quiet deadline was what he was expecting either. But I think at the same time, you know, he's content with what he's got. And as you said, Alex, it's about this team stepping up now. I think they, you know, they got over the hump last year with the first round series win. They got to a high. And as soon as they got to the high, it was almost like, you know, they took a breath of fresh air. And as they did, Florida came in and took the wins right out of their sails. So I think that's going to play into it this year. I did see a tweet too about, I can't remember who it was, but it was naming off all the defensemen that were moved: Tanev, Hanifin. There was a list of them, all of them with no finals experience. And then they had Joel Edmondson. Was it two Stanley Cups or two cup finals?
One win. Yeah.
Yeah. And one win. So, I mean, take that for what you will. I think experience is everything. I do think that's going to play a part. And I mean, this is a guy who understands. He's played against the Leafs. He understands the pressure that's on this team. He's played for Montreal. He understands the pressures that come with playing for a Canadian franchise.
And look how well he played with Montreal. Granted, it was the bubble and COVID season, but man, mm-hmm. he lived up to expectations of being that strong third pairing shutdown kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Anyways, yeah, that's what I kind of took from the deadline. Alex, I know you got to get going here, so we just want to touch on, there's not really much more Leaf talk over the past week. They've played some inconsistent play, obviously. We've seen some good, we've seen some bad. No Matthews tallies over the last week or so. So I'm going to throw you a quick good news story here. Easton Cowan, 32 games straight with a point. This was a question mark in the first round of the 2023 NHL draft, rather. What are your thoughts on Easton Cowan and the London Knights and what he's been able to do in his draft plus 1 year?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, if you had any reservations about that Rasmus Sandin trade, and, you know, speaking of him, congrats to getting that extension in Washington. He got his bag. Honestly, I think if you had any reservations about that, it's starting to lessen the blow a little bit. He's a very exciting prospect. And, you know, I already said, I've said it more than once, that I think that he's got a great chance to make the team next year, just because I think that the amount of salary that the Leafs are going to have tied up, especially into their core four next year, and, you know, the reliance that there's going to have to be on guys in the bottom six to produce. The reliance on cheap bottom six guys to produce. I think that, you know, an opportunity to get a guy with an entry level contract in there and give him his 9-game cup of coffee at bare minimum in the NHL. And then who knows where he goes from there. He could pull a Fraser Minton, and, you know, the team deems that he's not quite ready and send him back to junior again. But I mean, the pace that he's producing at junior this year is nothing compared, or like what Minton's doing is nothing compared to that. So I think there's a real chance that he could stay in, and his trajectory could be a little more, closer to that of Zach Benson in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we're just seeing how talented this guy is and how much he brings on every part of the game. He's on their penalty kill, and he scored, I think, 7 shorthanded goals this year. Mm-hmm. He's also, I mean, Forbes, you watch him closer than anybody else. He's on your hometown Knights. He's also, in addition to the offense, he's got that physicality. There was a clip someone shared of him throwing a big hit. And, you know, for a guy who's 5'11", but has a neck that's probably wider than my torso, I mean, he's a short, stocky little guy. He'll be a lot of fun to have on the team. And I really hope he can make the team next year, but obviously not to put too much pressure on the kid right now. I have to take off, boys, but thank you for getting this started. And I trust you guys to carry the rest of the show.
We'll carry it out.
We got you, man. Right, buddy.
Cheers, guys.
See ya, buddy.
Well, Peter, brief recess there as our fellow podcaster there ended our stream as he took off. Obviously wanted to take it with us. I you know what? Safe to say that maybe he didn't trust us to carry the show there. But anyways, I'm going to jump right back onto the Eastern Calendar train with you. 32 games. I believe the OHL record the OHL in the last 35 years. I'm just going to check that stat real quick before I throw it out there. But yeah, the past 30 years since 1994, the longest point streak was Bill Bowler. So Easton Cowan now at 32 games is tied with Brett McLean of the Oshawa Generals, who did in 2007-2008. Next up is Dave Gilmore at 33 games, another former London Knight in 93-94. From there, it's Trevor Letowski at 34 games from 96-97. And then, of course, Bill Bowler in 94-95 with 41 games straight. So, I mean, it's pretty incredible what this kid's done. I think it's safe to say that he's going to get a very, very close look heading into next season. But your take on Easton Cowan and what he's been able to bring?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely impressive of what he's able to do. I mean, you just listed off, like, you know, the list of, like, you know, players there. And, like, the last player to do it, or he's tied with Jordan Kyrou for the fifth longest point streak in 30 years. I mean, that's absolutely, you know, impressive. And I believe it's been the longest one since 07, 08, Brett McLean. Yeah, because he had a 32-game run as well in 2007-2008. So not a whole lot of, you know, 30-plus point streaks have been done in the OHL, and, you know, only a select few have been able to do it. And, you know, what he's able to show right now, it's, you know, Toronto took that risk. You know, they said that, you know, they like his competitive game. They like the dog that he has in him. He plays with, you know, that intensity. They were confident in taking him 28th overall, and it's now looking like that is the case. And even when we talked about, you know, I believe it was about a couple episodes ago where Jason Bacala said that, you know, Easton Cowan could be a higher pick, or that he could be higher up in this class, maybe even higher in the last one as well, if, you know, maybe there is a bit bigger more or a bigger sample size in regards to his game. But yeah, I mean, what he's doing is just awe-inspiring. Power play, penalty kill, and even Alex said, like, he's doing it all at this point. And not only that, throwing his weight around. I think that was the one thing that people did not expect quite much from him in terms of physicality. But if he's able to lay the boom, he can make a big-time hit. And as we just saw, like, if you go to the London Knights Twitter, you can see that clip, because he laid the body out and basically just gave, like, a little look back and be like, yeah, you want some of this too. So he's got that intensity. He's got that kind of, like, I don't know. I'm not going to go to lengths to call him Brad Marchand, but he's got that mindset to kind of get under the opposition skin. Not going as far as Brad, but, you know, he can do that. He can, you know,
he won't lick faces, is what you're saying. He won't lick faces kiss other players and whatever else.
Didn't want to bring up Brad Marchand's history, but yeah. I mean, exactly. But this is what you need. You need those pesky in your face players, and he can do it all. And that's amazing. What he's able to accomplish. And you know what? There's going to be a really strong debate whether the OHL is going to be too easy for him next year, because he's still too young for the A. It seems like it's NHL or nothing for Easton basically next season, because if he gets sent back down, he's going to light it up with 110, 120 points. And that seemed to be, like, we basically said, I mean, can't remember what he's on pace for right now, but he's basically 88 points or top 10 in the OHL right now. So when we basically were starting off, or even when we're talking with Kyle, who does stuff with the London Knights as well, we were anticipating at least 100 points. He's at 97 or on pace right now. So it's still within range. And if he has, like, you know, strong results down this stretch, it definitely could be one where, you know, next season is going to be an absolute cakewalk if he gets sent down, because it seems like it's NHL for him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, remember too that this kid was away from the OHL for a little bit at the World Juniors, playing for Canada, representing his country on the international stage as well. So
missed the first few weeks as well.
Missed the first few weeks as he's still with the Maple Leafs. So with that said, yes, he's in seventh right now in the OHL scoring race, 88 points through 50 games. No player ahead of him in the race right now has played even close to 55 game or 50 games. The only one being Carson Rickhoff with Kitchener, who's played 55 games. So five games higher than Easton Cowan's total. The top three have played 59 games or more. And he's sitting 13 points back of the number one spot. Safe to say that he still has a solid shot at, being a 100-point scorer if he were to have played every game this season. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the physicality. You mentioned Bukala's comment on the fact that this could be a guy that brings that Darcy Tucker type of mentality back to the Leafs. I love the fact that he plays with an edge. I love the fact mm-hmm. that he plays with some physicality. It's something that the Leafs need. His size is very underrated in terms of what he can do with it. He's very strong on his feet, and it'll be interesting to see what opportunities he gets in the next year or so. But again, this brings up the debate of the CHL versus the AHL. Once you're too good for the CHL, what kind of development you get at that level?
Yeah.
And I mean, Easton Cowan is a perfect example of a guy that, you know, his development will stall at a certain point when he's mm-hmm. playing at the OHL level. So,
you just also mentioned his size too, 5'11", 185. I mean, that's basically
not a big boy.
That's average, you know, height. But imagine if he gets to 6 feet and if he adds a couple more pounds of muscle, like, you know, what if he gets to 6 feet, 190? I mean, mm-hmm. that's absolutely going to work in his favor, especially if he's got that bulk to him. That's going to be very impressive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And one more thing too. This is a good reason to bring this up. It's a reason why Trill Living did not want to move on from Easton at all, because he basically said with the season that he's having right now, and this is from Terry Koshin, heck of a year and he's a heck of a player. There was no thought of moving Easton.
Yeah.
Basically absolutely. Summed it up right there.
Absolutely. BJ, good job, boys. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. As always,
thank you.
Quick comment from a YouTube viewer as well. Leafs versus Bruins, round one would make me happy. I think it would make a lot of people happy in the hockey world. Leaf fans, it would cause not PTSD. So it would cause a lot of PTSD. But at some point, they need to slay the demon. And you know, this is a year where they don't have Bergeron, mm-hmm. they don't have Krejci. You know, it is a different Bruins team, albeit they are still a very strong Bruins team. So that said, it'd be a hell of a series. It'd be a hell of a series.
Yeah, they slayed one dragon last year in Tampa Bay. Got to do the same with Boston. I don't think it. Again, it's going to be very tough. I think the Bruins may take it, but if the Maple Leafs surprise me, then this team really is all in with their mentality.
Yeah, I mean, the way the playoffs are set up, not being 1-8, you're going to be either Tampa Bay, Florida, or Boston, no matter what, over the next number of years. Dylan jumped in again. Canucks versus Leafs in the finals. Let's go. We need the cup back in Canada. I 100% agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
I 100% agree. I obviously don't want to see Montreal win it. I obviously don't want to see Ottawa win it.
After what happened in 2011, I do feel bad for Vancouver.
Yeah. Vancouver, I would love to see. I think it's a franchise that definitely deserves a little bit of credit. Winnipeg, I'm kind of indifferent. I know Calgary's not even looking at sniffing a playoff spot right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of out of the question. And really, I don't want to see Edmonton win it before the Leafs. I do not want to see McDavid get one before the Leafs. But that's just me. I'm not a McDavid hater.
But a Toronto-Edmonton matchup would be fun.
It would be incredible. It'd be incredible.
That's the ideal matchup right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I want to jump back to the Leafs from Easton Cowan for a second here, because we quickly before Alex shut us down, I had mentioned that Matthews hasn't scored in a few games here, and
You know, I saw your tweet as saying, you know, Matthews just looks a little different. Mm-hmm. How much of it is just like, you know, maybe relief or frustration even that there wasn't a lot done at the deadline, and maybe that's playing into it, or, you know, there's a whole lot of things that it could be. It might not particularly be an injury. That said, he has taken a few big bumps over the last little bit as well. What's your take on Matthews? Or, you know, the 70 goal season is slowly slipping away.
Yeah, if it was an injury, they definitely probably would have said something. If he is playing through something, it would probably be a very big mistake. But at the same time, it's like, see, he was making poor decisions that he never usually makes. That was my thing. Like, some of the mistakes or plays that he's pulling off, it's like, you would never have done that like 2-3 weeks ago, beginning of the season, mid season. It kind of feels like, you know, one of those, like, you know, bumps in the road, one of those lulls, and it was bound to happen at some point. But when, again, I know everyone's expected 70 goals. We all want to see it, but you know what? If he's, you know, just having this little bit of a rough patch, at least if he's healthy and he's 100% and he's ready to go for the playoffs, that's all that matters at this point. As much as I still love to see 70, if it means losing that as opposed to still just being healthy, I'd rather take Matthews being healthy, because at this point we all know he could be on pace to score 70. It is realistic. It's just, you know, finding that consistency, and it is tough in this league. It really is, but he's been the only one to try and do so since, you know, Ovi had his, you know, stretch of being a hot scorer as well. So I hope he's able to overcome it. I just hope he's healthy, because let's face it, we're in this final stretch right now. We need everyone to be on point.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I don't mind the fact that it's happening now. You mentioned how, like, you know, there'd be a rut at some point, and obviously, you know, you don't want to see that when you're on pace for 75 goals and on pace to win your third heart. Your third Rocket Richard. But at the same time, you know, you want to see it now. You want to have that now prior to the playoffs, than going into the playoffs with a cold superstar and him not being able to put the puck in the net, especially against a team like Boston, if that happens to be the first round. The Leafs, they're not in the clear yet when it comes to the playoffs, but they're getting there, and they've almost solidified their spot. And because of that, like, you know, we need to see what the depth scoring can provide for this team. Otherwise, you know, we're going into the playoffs with the same storyline that we have the last number of years, where it's going to fall on the shoulders of the core four. And that's not what you want either.
Some breaking news. You know who just solidified his spot? Bobby McMahon re-signs with the Leafs, 2-year contract extension. AAV of $1.3 million.
Wow. Wow.
Big congrats to Bobby right now.
That's a steal. And I have two boxes of Upper Deck Series 4 or Series 2 upstairs where you can get his Young Guns. So let's get that Young Guns.
That Young Guns is going to go up right now.
Let's get that Young Guns, baby. I think Fraser Minton's Young Guns in there as well. So that'll be fun. But yeah, congratulations to Bobby McMahon. That's huge news. And obviously, you know, we love breaking news here on Sticks in the Six as well. So there you go, Peter. Way to go, buddy. Way to go. Yeah, aside from that, let's jump ship from the Leafs real quick. Actually, sorry, we do have a little bit of Marley's talk. But before we do get into that, Bobby McMahon, undrafted, unsigned, or signed with the Leafs, and now has a big league contract, 2 years, 1.3 AAV. He bet on himself, and what better way to do that than with our sponsors at DraftKings. Perfect timing. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. If you look at the futures now, it's not Florida like it was a couple weeks ago. You're looking at Vegas as potentially one of the favorites, with Thomas Hertl coming back. You've got Mark Stone will likely be back at some point. Let's be honest, cap circumvention is the biggest thing in the NHL right now. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights are reserved. Well, before we jump into a little bit of NHL sprinkled news in there, we got to talk about the Joey Dusek and the Kyle Clifford fight that took place with the Marlies the other night. Obviously, Joey Dusek was a guy that was with the Marlies at one point, was in the Toronto system. There was some speculation that he kind of quit on the Marlies heading into the playoffs. Was it last year? I believe last year. And because of that, obviously there's a little bit of, let's call it a frayed history between the two, between the franchise and Dusek. Obviously he scores, as any former Leaf does, scores against his former club, the Marlies, and does his little circle in front of the bench, kind of pointing at the Marlies as he went by. Something was said to him. He turned back. Next chance they got, Kyle Clifford was going right at him. Dusek turtles, as anyone would. I want to get your take on this.
If you have to showboat in front of your former team's bench, you should expect an answer right away, or someone to come knocking on your door and be like, hey, yo, you got to answer for what you did. Literally, that's what happened. Obviously, it was the big, it was the man himself, though, it was Kyle Clifford, and he goes after him and he basically ducks and turtles. I mean, if you have to do that and you can't back up what you did, you are definitely in the wrong. I don't care if it was Clifford, if it was anybody else. If someone came after you after basically taunting the bench like that, you deserve everything that you get. It's basically the same thing that's going to happen in the NHL. We've seen it happen with Nick Cousins, how so many times something's happened to him, he ducks and turtles and then gets right back up and catches people off guard. And then you see Dusek smile about it afterwards, like kind of you knew what he was doing. And you know what? To me, that's basically not necessarily gutless, but you're just doing yourself a disservice by not holding up to what you've done and taking accountability for your actions. If someone's calling you and if someone's coming after you and they want to drop the gloves with you, and if you thought that you were in the right to, you know, celebrate like that in front of your former team's bench, you got to make the call. You have to basically stand up for yourself and at least give that effort of, you know, show that you're not backing down from a fight. He didn't even do that. So that's where I stand with that. I honestly think that was, you know, I don't understand what, I'm not inside his head. Don't know what his intentions were, but it did not come across as, you know, very genuine. And you saw everybody on the bench stand up and took exception to that. And you know what? When Clifford's on the ice, you better watch your back, basically.
Can we talk about how Clifford let up? Like, I mean,
he just basically easily, one punch and that was it.
One punch. He went down and he put his knee kind of on him and obviously said something to Dusek. To me, like, you're going to have the anti-fighters that are out there that kind of like rip on this idea, but that was a lesson, man. Like that was him just basically saying, like, you know, you want to be a young kid in the game. This was a veteran move. This was me going after you saying, you know, next time you do that, I'm going to pound your face in. And, you know, you have to imagine that Dusik's going to think twice about it next time he does it. I understand the idea of you want to hand it to your former franchise, but at the same time, act like you've been there, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is the whole idea about, like, act like you've been there. This was it was such a classless move. And I mean, it's not like he's a superstar that's going to be called up at some point. Like, this is a guy that had a falling out with the team that had his rights, and he decides to go and, you know, throw it in their face after he scores. Like, you know, we're not talking about you're 26 years old playing in the AHL. Like,
mm-hmm.
you've got 29 points in 46 games, 7 goals. Like, you're not a superstar, man. Like, it's, I don't know. I just didn't feel right about the whole situation. And then when Clifford went after him, I'm like, at the end of the day, like, Clifford's been to the show. Like, he's been around the block, man. Like, I don't mind taking it into his own hands. There, it creates accountability. It allows for policing in the game. And this is exactly what we talk about every time we talk about whether fighting has a place in the game.
Yeah.
It's exactly what this is the reason why they happen. This is the reason why fights happen in hockey.
I'm curious to know what, like, happened, because in 21-22, he had 52 points, didn't play in the playoffs. And then after that, he goes, plays for Dynamo Minsk in the KHL, and then comes back here.
So that's what I was saying. I think there was
some talk.
Yeah, there was some talk. I'll have to look it up, and I mean I can bring it up next pod, but there was some talk that he basically, like, quit on the team before, like, heading into playoffs. So this was there was conversation. I'd love to find it. I'd love to get into it now. I can't remember who had tweeted it out. So it says, back to when Dusik was a member of the Marlies and was publicly and very publicly
for final game, and they were shorthanded as a result.
Quit on his team. Yeah. He was not a popular guy in the room then. And obviously he's not a popular guy in Toronto now. 2 years ago, Dusik refused to dress for the Marlies' final game of the season, and they had to play short. He also left the arena before the end of the game and never showed up to another Marlies event until he was released shortly after. Then here, after scoring the goal, he goes straight to the Marlies' bench and starts taunting. So there you go. So then,
you know what? Like, I want to know what your reason was to not dress and to leave your team hanging like that.
To be honest, I don't even care. Here's the thing. What player came to his defense on his squad?
No one, basically.
It's pretty telling.
Yeah.
It's pretty telling. When you got a guy like Kyle Clifford coming at you and nobody on your team comes to your defense, it's pretty telling on what kind of person you are in the room. And
that's fine. You got to answer the call for your actions.
Absolutely. Basically. Yeah. Absolutely. Anyways, before we shut it down here, Peter, we want to talk about your new favorite NHLer, Rempe.
All of our favorite new NHL player.
Yeah, in New York, the Rangers have big 6'7" Rempe. He's wreaking havoc on the league in terms of the physicality and fighting. Outside of that, hasn't done much for his team, for the league. Anyways, he was suspended for 4 games for an elbow to Siegenthaler against New Jersey. It was a very clear elbow, very clear target of the head. I want to get your take before I throw my 2 cents into it.
I mean, Curtis McDermott basically said it right then and there. Lost a lot of respect for him because, you know, it was a good story for the first 3 games or so. You know, basically saying, you know, he's coming in, he's trying to make an impact, he's fighting, okay, fine, whatever. But now we need to see him actually play hockey, and he's not doing any of that. He's got 2 points, I believe, in 9 or 10 games. He's averaging 5 minutes of ice time, and all you're doing is showing that you could just only run around, hit, and take people's heads off. That is not hockey at all. And if you want to stay in the NHL, you got to do more than just that. we saw him leaving his feet against Ilya Lyubushkin, and Rempe's a big guy. He doesn't need to jump up and leave his feet and hit Lyubushkin in the neck and head area, because that is a blatant charge, and I'm surprised that there was no call, but, you know, of course, NHL officiating. And then he goes out and does something like this. But if you're just going around doing stupid moves and stupid plays like this, then there is no spot for you in the NHL. I get you want to make an impact. I get you want to keep a spot, but you got to show more that what you're doing right now, you're not just a one-trick pony. And I even told, when we were doing a live stream, I even talked to Kyle about this. Like, it's great. You want to show that you're, you know, physical. You want to be dominant. Other enforcers or other tough guys have taken note of that, but you got to do more. And to me, he hasn't shown that at all. And with the suspension, I'm surprised this is only his first one, because there are a few ones in the past that easily could have got him suspended. And I'm, and again, we're picking our battles here. Morgan Riley got 6 games for a cross check to the head that didn't amount to anything. And now he gets 4 games for an actual hit to the head. So
I'm glad you touched on that, because if you had gone through could take your right entire now. Piece,
that was my ending speech. You could take the floor.
If you had gone through your entire piece and didn't touch on the fact that Morgan Riley got 5 games for a cross check versus what was clearly 5 games,
sorry, not 6, sorry, but
yeah,
5.
Yeah. Still. Was a clear targeted elbow to the head. Can we circle back to when Ty Domi targeted Scott Niedermeyer's head in the playoffs and what he got suspended?
Yeah.
Can we look at that for a second? Can we look at the Morgan Riley suspension this year? The 5 games he got for cross-checking on a showboating play, and can we go back?
And
to
no
the,
injury resulted.
No injury resulted, and now can we go back to the Rempe hit where it was a clear elbow to the forehead of Siegenthaler, caused an injury, and he only gets 4 games.
Yep.
And on his way out, he's waving goodbye.
He's waving goodbye. Well, you know what? The Rangers got to make a choice too. Like, this is a guy that's probably going to hurt your team more in the playoffs than anything.
Is that what the NHL wants?
Yeah.
You would rather some 6'7" Sasquatch giant go up and elbow players in the face than a cross check that rolled up the shoulder and got the guy in the neck and chin. This league is so backwards.
That's the thing. This is George Parros at his finest.
This is what we talked about. This is not Leaf fans bitching at this point. This is what we were talking about when we were saying we need consistency. Mm-hmm. That's it. How do you understand the rules of what's okay and what's not if there is zero consistency? And everyone's going to come back and say, it was 1 game difference, the 4 games to 5 games. What are you bitching and moaning about? Consistency. That's what I'm bitching about. I want consistency. I don't want there to be a gray area when somebody smokes another player in the face that, well, we're going to, you know, yeah, it's a 4-game suspension just because, you know, you've only played 3 games in the NHL. So you don't really know what's best.
That is the biggest cop out ever.
No, if you've only played 3 games in the NHL and you're clearly a one trick pony, then you should be getting 10 games. If you played 700 games like Morgan Riley and you've never been suspended in your entire life,
that deserves more of the benefit of the doubt.
Absolutely.
Even if you got 1 or 2 games, fine, whatever. But to give him at least 5 when that gets less than that, again, it's a joke.
Everything about that situation was backwards. But it gave us something to talk about, something to close out the episode, and something for me to get passionate about. It's been a while.
It's been a long time without Leaf hockey, so.
It has. Anyways, the Leafs do get back into action tomorrow night, Thursday. Again, we apologize for the hiccup this afternoon and our part one and part two. Hopefully you tune into both. Hopefully you get a chance to watch both.
Yeah.
If you want to find the other part of this episode, go down there, right down there to YouTube at Sticks in the Six. Give us a subscription. We've always got content coming out weekly. We run right through the summer. We're a lot of fun. You know, we're even willing sometimes to get you fans on there to talk about your grievances. But otherwise, make sure you check us out on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. Add on Instagram, on TikTok. We're right across the board on socials. Make sure you shoot us a follow. And as always, on behalf of the Hockey Podcast Network and in the Ale House DraftKings as well, thank you for tuning in this week to 153. We'll be back next week getting ready for 154 and hopefully a little more juicy content to talk about with our Toronto Maple Leafs. Until next week, thanks for tuning in. Go Leafs, go.